She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And get ready to think about a lot today. I have to do a shout out to Chapman, our sponsor of this show. Their generous support helps Mrs. Green's World stay on the air. And also, through the important work of their community green team, they're doing their share, showing they care about our community and about our planet. Please visit them at ChapmanDuson.com to learn more about their 7 dealerships showcasing some of the greenest cars available on the market today. And now on with the show. So I'm a little bit starstruck, and you, all of you that listen to me week after week, know I'm right out there about how I'm feeling. And I guess the most important part of introducing our guest, Ira Flatow, is that dreams come true. So I have had a dream of interviewing people like Jane Goodall and Ira Flatow, and they're coming true. Ira said yes. So Ira Flatow, thanks for being on Mrs. Green's World Radio Network.
My pleasure, Mrs. Green.
And let me tell my audience a little bit about you if they don't know. And so many people said to me, you got Ira Flatow? You got Ira Flatow? And I'm like, yes. So I think your name is quite well known. But for those of you that don't know, Ira is the host of Science Friday. And he has, like I said, been a dream of mine since we started. Ira is a veteran NPR science correspondent and award-winning TV journalist. He is the host of Science Friday radio show, a weekly call-in program that really engages listeners and scientists in lively conversations, always, about science, technology, and environment issues in the news. Ira is brilliant. I'm saying that myself. I didn't read that anywhere.
Oh, my goodness.
And fun and funny. He has great shoes and is strongly committed to making science user-friendly. We're going to talk a lot about his work, his book, one of his books really intrigued me, and how this award-winning journalist is helping how the future is actually happening right now. He's explaining that, and we're going to talk about some of the most fun things he's ever done, including, I want to know about the Big Bang Theory, but we're not going to start there, Ira. I do have whirling dervish brain, but I also have really great questions. So two fun things to get us started. Our friend Jim Gentile said hello, and I had to say that on the air. He connected us in the first place.
Right.
He is now.
Well, let me just say that I'm very happy. You know, I felt like you're reading my obituary about my.
Really...
I mean, but I, you know, I'm very happy to talk to you because you do act. You take action. You know, Albert Einstein once said, and it is something that I try to live by, and I hear that I see that you live by it. It is, you know. Those who have the privilege to know have the duty to act. And once you have the privilege you have knowing the truth or how things, you know, work or how they should be, you have the duty to act on those principles. And he not only talked the talk, he walked the walk. I mean, he did that in 1939 when he told President Roosevelt about the Nazis developing the atom bomb. He had the privilege to know that, and he acted on that knowledge, and I really greatly believe in that, and I think that's what you do, and that's, I think, really the bottom line of what we all try to do.
And thank you for that. I am receiving it with great honor, and I mean it. You know, my journey started in the Amazon rainforest. I had a career in social services, 35 years, took a trip to the rainforest in Peru, and that's when I got the call. You know, my books, it's Your Mother Called Mother Earth, You Better Call Her Back. Well, that's what happened. I got the call to act. I started to know better, and I thought, people need to know what's going on with this great planet of ours. So what, I get a shout out from Ira Flatow. Dude, dreams do come true. So let's go about you. And Biosphere 2, that was the other thing I wanted to say, that you are now on the board of Biosphere 2. I know they are thrilled to have you. I am a big, big, big supporter of what they're doing. And it's one of America's best kept secrets. I try to get people out there all the time. And it's amazing. So thank you for that. Saying yes to that, located right here in good old Arizona. One good thing that's happening about Arizona.
Really? Yeah,
we're not going to go there.
Let's
not go there, because this is a fun show. So it's always good to start at the very beginning. And I'd like to talk about your beginning as host of Science Friday. It was a long time ago. I don't want it to sound like your obituary. But how did this Science Friday journey begin for you? It's so important.
Well, you know, actually next week we'll be entering our 25th year
I've
of doing
read that.
Science
Happy anniversary.
Friday. Thank you. We went on the air November in 1991, and first week of November. So that next week will be our anniversary. It's interesting. I mean, I had worked at NPR as a science reporter and a correspondent from year one. Let's put it that way. And I worked there until about 1983 or so. I can't remember. And that's about 17 years or so. And I decided to go off and do some television. I did a TV show on PBS called Newton's Apple. And it was about how things work. It was a lot of fun, but a lot of work.
Right.
I did that for about 7 years. I got exhausted from it, and I wanted to take some time off. So I started writing a book, and I wrote a book and whatever, and got some time off to do a little different stuff. But I wanted to get back into radio, which was my first love and still is. And I went back to NPR, and I suggested, you know, there's this whole new industry developing. It's called talk radio.
Yes.
You know, there's this guy named Limbaugh and somebody else, you know, are doing it. We should get NPR, should get a talk radio. And actually, I would love to do a science show, but I don't think we should do it one day of the week. And so the vice president of NPR, Bill Buesenberg, said, a good friend of mine, he said, well, you know, what are we going to do the other 4 days of the week? I said, well, maybe I can line up other hosts and you can do other topics. I said, you know, I'll talk to Susan Stamberg and I'll talk to Diane Rehm and these other people. Maybe they're interested in it. And I started lining up people. And actually, as I was working on this, Saddam Hussein actually bailed us out.
Is
he started
really
a war. Well, you know, he started a war and in 1990. And NPR started doing a daily talk show on what was going on in the war. And the war didn't last very long. That one didn't. And the stations really say, hey, talk show, we'd like that. And I jumped up and said, remember my idea, talk show, science? And Bill said, okay, we'll give you Friday, and then we'll do the other 4 days and call a talk of the nation. So we had... That's how we got started. And Talk of the Nation was on for a while, and management did away with Talk of the Nation a few years ago, but we being an independent entity that we are, stayed on and joined Public Radio International, and here we are, still about to enter our 25th year.
And not just really just that, you know, keeping the audiences. I read two different statistics, 1.5 to 2 million audiences. So you're not just keeping on the air. You're keeping, you have such a tribe, as my friend Seth Godin would say.
Yeah.
What an absolute loyal and ever-present tribe. So for listeners who might not be informed, tell us what Science Friday is and what the format is. It's on every Friday.
It's on every Friday. Well, I mean, you know, we have grown because we're into social networks. So our basic show is every Friday, 2 hour radio program, listened to by 1.5 million people around the country. Then we take the program and we turn it into a podcast. So now we had another 500,000 people who are listening to it all over the world. And then we do educational, have a big educational outreach, and we make curricula and projects for teachers on our website at sciencefriday.com, where we are expanding that. So the show helps push the educational material, giving it publicity, so we leverage all these things together. And then we just opened a brand new website this week. We had our website up. We just redid it, make it a lot easier to use. It's a lot more fun. And so now we make materials on the website. And then we have Twitter. We have Twitter, and we have 600,000 Twitter members. We have, of all the shows in public radio, we have a one-day-a-week radio show. We have the biggest social community of any public radio show.
Oh, my gosh, Ira, that's amazing. Like, seriously.
Well, it's because, you know, the dirty little secret is that people love science. I mean, you'll hear all the time that people don't like science, but they do. They love science, and they will get as much science as they can take. And all you have to do is look at our audience and then look at web pages of some of the science shows and things that are on the Internet. And these are among the most visited places on the Internet. We do Reddit sometimes, which I didn't know what that was. That's where
right. You have to learn all these things, right?
Yeah,
Reddit's big.
And we did a Reddit, and we had a great audience for Reddit. And then I subsequently learned that when they do science-related Reddits, these are among the most popular related, you know, kinds of Reddits. So science, you know, every show now that comes out is a science-related show. Well, you know, I was on The Big Bang Theory twice. And the Big Bang Theory is the most popular show, most popular entertainment show on CBS, on television.
And you just have to love it. I mean, you have to love that show. It just makes you laugh just by the way they look.
Yeah, well, you know, what happened is science is sexy. Science now and being smart is sexy. So what's the show that follows The Big Bang Theory? They said, hey, if you like that, we've got a show called Scorpion. That's about these geniuses, right?
Yes.
And then they followed another one of that. Well, if you're not born a genius, we'll give you a pill that'll make you one, you know? And all these people, Craig Ferguson, the guy who used to have a late-night TV show, he's an Australian guy, he left the show, and what's the first thing he wanted to do? He wanted to create a science show. I mean,
love it.
This stuff is so popular, and you know, but if you talk to the gatekeepers, they never heard of it before, but it's gotten increasingly popular. And as Deep Throat said to Woodward and Bernstein, follow the money. And that's where all the new money is going. The money is going to creating all these science shows now on cable or on the Internet.
And how so encouraging is that, especially to be the early adopters and the ones that are at the head of the at the head of the parade? But, you know, when you go to the website, and I do have to comment on that, because where Mrs. Green's World would not be in existence without the World Wide Web, okay? WWW
right.
is key. But there's things on it that to me is for children of all ages, which to me is the highest compliment someone can give me. But there's things like Geek My Pumpkin. And then there's features like that was for the Halloween time and features, zombies and bloodsuckers. And I really do want to try and talk bit about, no, there, that was hysterical.
Yeah, this week we have a whole 2 hours of blood-sucking zombie science on for Halloween.
<It's> like, who doesn't want to know that? The Hunt for Dark Matter. Do you think that I want to click on that? I do. I do. Somebody is really helping you, unless I'm sure you're not doing the whole website yourself, making engaging and fun. And that was one of my questions is, do you sometimes stand in awe, like going back from when you did 25 years ago to what you just had to do then to staying on top of what you do now? It's exhausting.
Yeah. And it goes back 40 years. I mean, I've been in this business over 40 years.
So you're 42. Wow, that is great.
That's
you
it,
look
exactly.
So great.
Well, when I started out, I mean, I was literally at NPR from year one. My boss, Bill Siemering, when I was in college, he was my college radio boss, and he left Buffalo, where I went to school, to start NPR. And I had enough of the winters, so I said, get me out of here. And I eventually went there as he left. He invented it, and then he invented Fresh Air and other things that came later. We were there from year one, and I had to watch. I've watched over the years. I've had to teach myself everything. I mean, there was no genetic engineering when I started covering science.
That's
didn't exist.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, that is
and
just,
I, yeah. You know, and I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know any of this stuff. I got a C and a D in chemistry when I was in high school and college.
Is that really true?
Yeah. And but over the years, I've learned how to teach myself this stuff by reading good books. There's some really interesting books that you can find out there. We have them on our website, too. And if I need to know something, being in the position I am, I can call a professor or a Nobel Prize winner or somebody like that, and they'll explain it to me in plain language.
So that a little snapshot of that, just so timely for me, is the social media monster, as I call it. I was listening to PBS News last night, because if you're in Arizona, that's really the only world news you get to listen to. Dig
so
on my part. Sorry to hear that. And there was a guy on from, of all things, Vanity Fair, and he was like a young genius, and he was talking about Twitter. And he said 77% of people that tweet are not in the United States. Well, I didn't know that. I'm Mrs. Green, and we have a very active Twitter community, but things like that. And then he was talking about Snapchat, and I'm like, don't even talk to me about that. I cannot manage another social media maven coming into my life because it's ever-changing. I love Instagram, but you guys have to be on top of all of those.
We have one person dedicated. We hired a social media person who does nothing but teach me how to do social media and other stuff. And he does great stuff. You know, we're like doing Periscope. You know what Periscope is?
I do not. I probably don't want to know. Tell me.
No, Periscope is owned by Twitter. It's basically a live. You take your cell phone out and you do a live broadcast on your cell phone. But the broadcast goes through the Periscope app. Open the Periscope app, you'll get more and more people, and it's designed to do things live anywhere you are. For example, we've been using Periscope before we start the show. I'm in the studio, and I'll start talking about the show on Periscope, and you'll get Periscope, you know, audience who knows to tune in, or we sort of tweet out beforehand, hey, we're going to do a Periscope beforehand. So it's so easy. You could do a Periscope, get your listeners and podcast people to, you know, become, get ready for when you tweet out that, hey, it's 7 o'clock tonight, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, whenever you're going to do it. I'm going to be in the garden. I'm going to be outside doing something green. And this is the beauty of this thing. You know, work on, you know, anywhere you get a Wi-Fi connection and you can demonstrate stuff. It's kind of fun.
It does sound like fun, and it doesn't sound. And I'm really good with spontaneous, and I go to things sometimes. Like I just went to the Bioneers Conference in San Francisco, and I wanted to share so much of what I was learning, and I could have stepped out and said, "Just talk to, you know, thought leader, global leader, Paul Hawken, and here's what he had to say." Wish you all were here. I mean, it would really be fun to be able to do that. And I am so, like, kind of sad that I didn't even know about Periscope.
Now I know.
And now I have to act on that knowledge because I'm going to listen to Albert Einstein. And I so believe what you said. I know. But let's talk about some of the ingredients because, Ira, it doesn't just happen. I mean, we're going to come up on a break, so we'll have to probably talk about it in two parts. But it's not just talking about science and people like science. Science Friday makes it fun. It makes it sexy. It makes it informative. What are some of the other key things that you think are the ingredients to success? Because you can't argue with the success of what's...
Well, we have a great staff that helps find the things.
Okay,
find
that's
the topics.
Critical, right.
You know, yeah, we go through all the journals, you know, or earlier in the week, we go through the journals and look for what stories might be interesting. And we have to decide.
So a great team, right.
Yeah, great team. Deciding how to choose which stories is the most difficult part, the triage that goes into it.
I bet.
Because we'll look at a story and say, hey, this is going to be very popular. Maybe we should do that. But on the other hand, here's a really small story that's really, really interesting that nobody's going to do. Let's do that one.
And that's exciting to be that. I like to do the macro and the micro. Like, what is the next best great idea? I mean, I really love to do that. So, here's the thing about radio. If you're having fun and enjoying learning, we're already up on our first break, and it's a very short one. And everybody, if you just joined us, having a ball and learning from Ira Flatow. He's a veteran NPR, like he's older than dirt. I'm so kidding, Ira.
No, I mean, I am. I need to see it. Oh my gosh.
If you were, I cannot believe that you were there when PBS got started. So anyway, we're going to learn a lot more from Ira. Please stay here with us about science, his philosophy about learning about science, lots more good, great, fun, informative stuff. Please stay here with me.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Pacific time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmerglass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. And now, more with Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And what fun we are having thinking today. I am so happy to have as our guest and honored to have Ira Flatow. He is a veteran NPR science correspondent and award-winning TV journalist, many, many awards. He is the host of Science Friday Radio Show, a weekly call-in program that engages listeners and scientists in lively conversations about science, technology, and environment issues in the news, and he's finding the best next thing also. I want to talk about, there's one thing on your website that I cannot help for Science Friday, the Science Friday initiative, and it's about, sorry, I'm laughing. I didn't plan on doing this. The making of a model eardrum to detect sound waves using a smartphone. And the reason I brought that up is because so many kids are being homeschooled today. Many. I have a brilliant friend who has her group called, it's called the Unschooling Group. And it's huge. It's hundreds of kids in Tucson. From what I can say, they're all geniuses. So Science Friday website actually offers education to parents and educators so that they can get engaged in these, how to build an eardrum. I never thought of like putting that on my bucket list.
Well, you know, we believe in creating. We have a whole division of education materials, but we also believe, and I'm a great believer in this, and tried to bring this into my work. There's STEM. You've heard of STEM
science, and that,
right?
It follows the curriculum. Yes.
Right, but we now believe in STEAM.
Okay.
Which is you add the arts to STEM, and you get STEAM.
I love that.
You know,
I hope
because. Yeah,
so,
because the best way to understand science and to attract kids into it is through the arts. And the arts know, Richard Feynman, one of the great Nobel Prize-winning physicists, who was a wacky, wacky, wonderful physicist, he wrote a book called The Joy of Knowing. And he said, you know, I have an artist friend, and we talk a lot about art. And he said, he says he can look at a flower and see how beautiful it is, and the stem, you know, and everything else, the colors, the way it's designed, and he gets a certain beauty out of that, and he loves to look at it that way. But because I like science, I can appreciate things that he can't appreciate about the flower, like what's inside the flower,
right?
What makes it work. The photosynthesis, the Fibonacci pattern the leaves make around the flower. So we believe that that's how you bring, you bring people to science also through the arts. That's what I was talking about, the television and whatever. Those are the people in the arts world have realized that science people are, and the arts people are basically the same kind of audience.
And you can't just throw around things like the Fibonacci piece without telling people what that is, because I didn't know what it was maybe a year ago, but that's really, it is in art. It is when you start looking through that view. So tell our listeners, I think I can even spell it.
Fibonacci was a mathematician who found I'll just so oversimplify this, who created a number sequence. And you, it basically, if you start with the number one and you add two, then you get three, then you add the three and the two and you get five, and you get, you know, you add the five and the three, you know, it goes up like that. You add all those numbers together, and so you get a number pattern. Well, the leaves, if you look down on a flower, like on certain flowers, you can see that the leaves rotate around as they go around the stem of the flower in a Fibonacci series.
And it's in nature everywhere. I mean, I was at this conference and somebody gave me their card and I looked at it. And he had it on his card. It was a beautiful card. And in each part of like kind of the golden spiral, he put little pieces of what he does, because he was, you know, he was a farmer and he was this and he was that. And it was just one of the neatest business cards I've ever seen. So sexy, fun. And for people that don't know, STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. So you want to add art. And please, let's start that revolution. How great would that be? Don't forget how you can learn so much and have it be fun from art.
It's, well, you know, the two biggest movies on, you know, in the films, the last two or three years, Academy Award nominated, they were fighting for. One was about Alan Turing, and that was about Stephen Hawking. These top rated films, art, are about two of the greatest scientists, right?
Yes, I mean, and they're blockbusters.
And who won? And what won the Tony? The biggest award on Broadway, what play won the Tony, was about a 14-year-old mathematician kid, you know, Dog in a Nighttime play. It was just, I saw it as a great play. But there again, art in intersection with science and math is a great attraction. And authors, playwrights, they all realize that there's a great attraction to knowing these things.
It really is, and you're so passionate about it. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, it's no wonder everybody tunes in to listen to what you have to say on so many different topics. And like, I was dying. I almost lost track of what I was doing when I was listening to your interview with Sylvia Earle. And that's another person, big name, that I'm going to get to interview, and people know about her. Like, and you know what people say. I mean, I'm Mrs. Green, and they say, you got Sylvia Earle? You know, you got, and it's like, yes, because people like you want to share your passion and your excitement in the realm of people like me that want to share that word. So let's go to a question here. Your mission, and I read this about you personally, is to expand the role of science in a science challenge world. So what's your report card on that? How are we doing as a, not
I
just...
Think we did. I think we're doing great. No,
good,
I mean, I think,
good.
As I say, you know, I used to express it like, I want to make science a topic of discussion around the dinner table,
right?
As much as you say, hey, you know, did you see who won the World Series today? Don't ask me about that today.
Me either. Thank you very much. I'm a Jersey girl.
Well, okay. Yeah. But you know, as much as you want to talk about that, you might want to say, hey, guess what I heard on Science Friday, or guess what I heard on, you know, on your show or your podcast or whatever. I want that to become as much of a part of the discussion as sports or business or the stock market, or, you know, certainly not politics, but, you know, and that's, I think, how I think of when I think of a science topic. I want people that night to say, hey, guess what I heard? Guess what I learned today about, you know, Pluto and the planets and all this kind of great stuff that we don't know about. Our favorite topic now is the microbiome. You know, this sort of great, interesting stuff that just blows your mind.
So tell us about the microbiome.
The microbiome.
Oh,
you
see,
know,
that's the passion.
Now, I'll summarize it this way and go into a little bit. 90% of the genetic material of the DNA, you know, your cells have all DNA, 90% of the DNA in your body doesn't belong to you.
It just blows me away. Like, the first time I heard that, it's like, are you kidding me right now? Don't even tell me.
You know, there are trillions and trillions of bacteria that live in your intestines that help digest your food. And we thought that they didn't have much to do with your body, but now we know that whatever your microbiome wants to eat, it can actually go through the nerves in your inside and up to your brain and tell your brain what it wants. Well, that's maybe why we like to eat junk food. Maybe we've trained our microbiome, or we have a microbiome that wants to do that. The microbiome fights off diseases. We want to keep it healthy. We are just, you leave a piece of the microbiome behind you when you leave a room. I mean, you don't
Ira,
know it.
Are you kidding me?
No, you don't.
Is that your energy? Like, people might call it energy?
No,
like,
it's
what?
The bacteria in your body.
Stop
you
it.
You leave it behind. You leave it behind, you know?
It's kind of like, ew.
Well, you know, actually, they're trying to figure out if they can use it as sort of a fingerprinting method now. If they, you know, if they go into a room and they find enough traces of someone's microbiome who's been there a while, we exchange microbiome with each other.
Doesn't the whole concept, it's so hard to fathom for me. It's so hard. For you as a scientist, is a little bit easier. I mean, it's so vast.
But you see, I'm not a scientist. I'm just a geeky guy. I'm just a geeky guy. I'm like a science yenta. I like to tell people what I know, what I've learned about science. And that's why, I have a bit of a ham in me, which likes to talk about stuff, and I'm not afraid to talk about it. So.
I think we need to hashtag that and tell your social media person we're going to hashtag science yenta. It'll probably go viral. I am
that's
so
me.
Not kidding. Okay, so yeah, microbiome.
You'll see a lot about this, a lot of, just search for that, and it's such interesting stuff, because there's even a part of medicine now that is trying to cure people by taking out their whole microbiome and substituting a healthy one.
So,
because it is so important in your body, it influences so much that goes on in your body, that they're swapping out
and it's
unhealthy
just
microbiome.
New. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's cutting edge science
about
our species. I mean, it just really does blow me away. And I'm sure they're going to identify a specific microbiome for being genetically engineered to like chocolate.
That's in my DNA. Well, you know, the soil now, we've discovered the soil has its own microbiome. And that keeps the soil healthy. And I was reading a paper a while back that, you know, there are all these trillions of bacteria. The thing about bacteria, what's interesting about bacteria is that we can't get 90% of the bacteria. And there's so much bacteria in the soil, they can't grow 90% of it in the laboratory to study. There's so much undiscovered stuff out there, you know.
It's like
and
the human brain.
And this is where
brain.
We got penicillin and other things. But now with genetics, they can't grow the bacteria. They can take a sample of its genome. And then they can see how the genome works instead of having to watch it grow. So they've gotten around that a little bit. But we've discovered that if you plow up the backyard and you plow up the fields, you are disturbing the microbiome of that field, too, and making it less productive.
And you have some
plant
on it.
Seeds? Yeah.
On
that's not microbiome. You do. You kind of, you know, there's all this research that's talked about kids maybe with asthma and whatever. And they're not playing outside enough or being dusty. Maybe it's part of the microbiome they're not getting from the outside that they need, you know.
And, you know, it's just to me, the way that I can put my head around it a little bit is energy. And the thing about the microbiome is that's a new word in our lifetime, like a very relatively new word. And I love it. It's like pioneers. I had to look that up and see how that phrase came about. But this guy, I, of course, don't know what his name is, but I remember reading about it. He made the name up. I mean, it's only 10, 15 years old. It's such new science.
That's right.
And,
yeah,
you know,
there's
I wonder
a lot of new science going on.
If I, you know, there's no way to stump Ira, but one of the things that I learned at this conference, which I love to go to, is, you know, how beneficial no-till farming is. So it ties in to what you said.
Exactly.
It ties in.
Exactly.
It's like don't turn the soil over because it's really better for carbon emissions and all of that if you don't. Okay.
Yeah.
So who knew we were going to talk about the microbiome?
Yeah, well, you know, that's
why
you see the old method. Some of the old method was you took a thin rod, you stuck a hole in, you dropped a seed in. Then
yes.
you did not disturb the microbiome.
Right.
You know?
And that was being connected to the earth, and now look what we do. We're not going to go off on that tangent of what we put on the earth. So what about, there was another thing that really got me excited about Science Friday, that it actually, there's a whole section there where you invite people to share your story, which I think is so brilliant. You can go in and it walks you through. It's like how to record your stuff for idiots. And I don't mean that in any negative way. You don't have to be a technology genius to go to this website, which is so fun. And Science Friday, it will tell you how to record your story and send it in. So what's happening with that? Are people doing it? Are they sharing their stories like crazy?
Well, we believe, and this is in its infancy, this technology to do this stuff. But we believe that people have stories to tell, and we believe that people love science, and there's going to be a connection, between people and the science stories they tell. We started this a while back with science. We had a science club. We still have a science club where we crowdsource. We tell everybody, send us this or send us that. And it's amazing. I'm now looking outside at all the trees turning colors, and that was the first project we asked people to do, was to take a picture of the leaves in their neighborhoods, and as they change, and let's all share them on our website. Send them to us. We gave them a little bit of an instruction. Here's how to here's the best way to take a picture. Here's how you set your camera up, whatever, of a leaf. And we got like 700 people.
Oh my gosh.
Sent us pictures.
It's
probably still up there at our website. Beautiful, beautiful pictures of that sort of stuff.
I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say you probably did not get a lot of submissions from Arizona. We had a leaf change. We did. I saw it.
We didn't ask for any saguaro cactus, I don't think, yet. any pictures.
And the funny thing about Arizona is we used to have a place up in northeastern Arizona called Greer, and the Wallow Fire wiped it out. But it's gorgeous there. It has aspens in their full regalia. It's beautiful.
That's
there are beautiful
great parts
of Arizona that, I mean, I love the desert too.
I know. I love the desert. I mean, I love the Sonoran Desert. And I remember the first time I was there, and I started out in Phoenix, and I headed up toward the Grand Canyon, and I was blown away by the way you could see the vegetation change as you went up north. It was, here's a cacti. Here's the first little tree. Here's the first bush. Here's the first this.
Yes.
Wow. Look at the progression. I can't believe it, And I love rocks. So when I got up into, the Red Rocks area and all that stuff, I love nature.
There's such diversity here. I mean, there really is. Like you said, the Sonoran Desert. And from here, for those of us that are based in Tucson, you can go up to Mount Lemmon. And you're at, I don't know what it is, maybe 7,000 feet, 6,000, or maybe a little bit shorter than that. I'm not sure. I mean, not as high, but you're in the pine trees, and you're surrounded by all of that beauty. And it takes like 25 minutes to get here from your front door. So it's a great relief in the summer. So I just got all excited about Arizona, and you talked about Sedona, another great place.
Well, I have to say something else great about Arizona is that
please
I'm
do. We need all the compliments we can get.
I'm also an airplane buff, an aircraft buff, and I know right outside where you guys are, there's this wonderful
Pima Air and Space Museum.
Yeah, and you can take. They have World War II airplanes that you can take rides in, and I was there. Looking at they had bombers, B-25s, B-17s that were working, and people were getting rides and stuff, and I was like,
so there was a lot for Ira. I can't wait till you come back. I'm sure there's other treasures we can still show you. Do you know about, this is totally random, not in any way something I saw coming up, but have you ever visited Hood River, Oregon?
No.
And it's relevant. I mean, it's relevant because there is a museum there that knocked our socks off us, and it's a car and airplane museum.
No kidding.
Ira.
No kidding.
So serious. Like, people that work there are as passionate. They're volunteers. And every single one of the planes, there was like this 80-year-old woman, I'm not kidding, which I, of course, think is young now, who all the planes work. and they bring them out, and they are old planes. And she's a pilot. She goes, yep, I fly every chance I get. Are you a pilot? No. She said to me, I said, oh, no, no, no. And she goes, you could be. And I said, put it on the bucket list. But it was like going to the Smithsonian only in Hood River. And I mean, I never heard of it till I went and visited there. Okay, we have to take another break.
All right.
It's like, we'll be right back. You know about those pesky breaks. Everybody stay with us.
Bills.
More from Ira Flatow from Science Friday. Stay here with me.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and we want to make thinking fun. So why would we not be so excited about having as our guest Ira Flatow? He is a veteran NPR science correspondent. I keep laughing because it's not reading your obituary, Ira. An award-winning TV journalist. He is the host of Science Friday radio show, a weekly two-hour call-in program that engages listeners and scientists in lively conversations about everything you can possibly think of in the world of science, technology, and environment issues in the news. And Ira, you know, I want to ask you some things about, like, everything you always wanted to ask Ira, and I want to just honestly ask you, I read a lot about one of your books, Present at the Future, and I know, I think it was published in 2009, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Does it still delight you? I mean, there's so much good stuff, quote unquote, in there.
There is.
There really is. You know. It's like, it's a timeless treasure, if you ask
me. It's unbelievable.
It really is.
I wrote a book years and years ago called Rainbows, Curveballs, and Other Wonders of the Nature Explained.
Okay.
And it summarizes all the things that you see around you that I discovered on my own. For example, when you see a rainbow and I see a rainbow and we're standing next to each other, I don't see the same rainbow that you see because of the way that light enters, you know, rainbows go through mist. So like raindrops, the sunlight goes through raindrops at a certain angle. It has to really be a precise angle. I think it's like 41.5 degrees. So that's why you always see it at the end of the day or at the beginning. The sun has to make that angle with the rain. And then the raindrops diffract the light out and you see the light separated into colors. But since the angle is so precise, you're not standing at the same 41.5 degrees than I am. You're seeing light coming out of the different drops than I am because you have to be at that exact angle. We're not on top of each other.
And we have different microbiomes.
I just had to throw that in. It blows me away. And you learn about what's at the bottom of the ocean. You know, the what's at the bottom of the ocean is just mind-blowing. Mind-blowing stuff that we don't know about.
What lies beneath?
We're making
so much.
Well, you need, yeah.
That
you
lies
know.
Beneath. And what about...
We know more probably about the surface of Mars now than we know about the bottom of the ocean.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, in all the pictures that have been coming out of late about Saturn, I mean, there's just so much. We're in that exploration and we don't really know what's going on. You know, I call it what lies beneath. And then this is just one of the wacky questions that I wanted the answer to because I didn't read the book yet. And it's available for download. It's really great. And it's called Present at the Future. So why do shower curtains stick to us?
That
made me laugh. Of all things that would pique my interest, it's like, it's so annoying. Why do they?
Well, because the water coming out of the shower head creates this really incredible vortex of air inside the bathtub, or inside your shower stall. Well, the bathtub, we have the shower curtain.
Okay.
And it swirls around, and in its natural swirling pattern, the shower curtain gets sucked into the vortex. And so you're standing there in the way, you know? And so the stuff gets stuck to you.
You become a magnet for the shower curtain.
Yeah.
Which is it's really annoying. So that was just a little trivial one I wanted to ask. And then I wanted to cover some of the in the book, you said there were things that were shockers that you've learned along your journey. And I think it's a really interesting conversation about scientists who believe in a creator. And why was that shocking to you? And what did you find?
Well, it wasn't really shocking that there are scientists who believe in the creator, because I know a lot of scientists. I know a lot of scientists
right.
who believe in God and the religious. What they're able to do, though, is they're able to create little different realities in their head. They're able to put their religion in a box separately
right.
and do their science in a different box so that... you know, science cannot answer questions about God because God is supernatural.
Right.
And science only talks about nature. So it's in a box that doesn't, you know, can't talk about God or its existence. There's no way you can disprove God because you can't come up with an experiment that does that. So you can't come up with an experiment that does prove it or disprove it. It's
right.
all that kind of stuff. So they're able to put them... Their religious beliefs, their spiritual beliefs in one area and not let it affect their science beliefs.
Okay.
The way they do science.
I get it. I really get it.
Yeah.
And then what about, like, how do you think we do, one of the my purposes for being is that I think a lot of scientists are challenged by being able to speak what they know in English. They're very good at speaking science, but
right.
many of them are very challenged when it comes to translating that into, you know, what I call plain English. So
right.
is that one of the, do you agree with that? Do you disagree with that?
No, I absolutely agree with that. And it's always such a pleasurable discovery. Talk about being surprised. It's always such a pleasurable discovery to find a scientist who can cross that divide.
Right.
Who is able to really explain in plain language and interesting plain language, you know. Eric Kandel, Nobel Prize winner in neuroscience, is one. There's Turner in astrophysics, who's great. Neil deGrasse Tyson for sure. But finding these people, sometimes on Science Friday, if we come up with something like on particle physics or quantum mechanics,
right, you have to find somebody
stuff.
To talk about it.
Yeah, and if we don't, but we know who they are.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah, you know, if it's a scientist who's involved in that research who made a discovery, but he's not a good talker, we could go to Sean Carroll. Well, he's a great talker. Talk about science.
Really, really great, and it's so important. I mean, that's how I feel with my partnership with the university and the Institute of the Environment. Part of what the new Institute of the Environment is doing is actually training the scholars to make presentations, and they have forums that we can all go to, and these. They said part of your new mission is to make science real to the masses and be able to talk about and articulate. And I'm telling you, Iris, sometimes I sit there, I'm like, what do they do? Like, if you're talking about,
right,
you know, there's a guy
I know.
That we call Scat Man
right.
that we love, and he studies scat, and he's just wonderful. But there's some that I'm like, I sit there, and I think I know, you know, maybe better than the average bear or not because of Mrs. Greenfield.
Right.
And I'm like, what? What I'm not really sure. So we help them and give them feedback because they're using
great.
Too many terms and all of that stuff.
Right. Well, so, you know, Alan Alda has started a whole new career doing this. Alan Alda's out at Stone, you know, the famous actor of MASH
yes.
and all that stuff.
I'm like,
he's out
Alan
at Stony
Alda.
Brook. He's out at Stony Brook on Long Island. They've actually named an institute after him now that he actually goes and teaches scientists how to do improv. He has a whole improv he does
you
with scientists.
Are kidding.
And he does it on the road. Maybe he'll come out to you guys and, you know, conduct a class. I've seen the class. So he gets them out of their shell, you know. He uses the same improv techniques that the actors do when they go to a studio.
Talk and about fun.
Yeah. And so he gets them out there out of their shell and so they're better able to communicate what they know because they don't feel so self-conscious. you know, and they learn how to speak and communicate. And he's been doing this now for a couple of years.
But, and it kind of makes it contagious. Like, you know, I love it when people say your enthusiasm is contagious. And what about, there's other things that you do. You did a 4-part series on PBS called Big Ideas. I'd love you to talk a little bit about that. What are some of the big ideas, and how are the concepts that you covered changing the way we look at the world?
Well, they're great big ideas. That series I did at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, where Einstein was, and I actually got to play his piano a little bit.
You are kidding me. And the talk about beautiful campus. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But there, you know, and we were talking with institute scientists about physics and the world, and some things you just can't wrap your head around, like this whole concept of the multiverse. Are there an infinite number of universes
right
out there, and we just happen to be in the one that works for us, you know? But there are a whole bunches of that. Boy, try to get that, you know, try to wrap your head around an infinite number of universes, or
those are big ideas.
Those are big ideas.
Really big ideas. And then on PBS, so that people can look at them and relook at them, and again, engaging mainstream thinkers about big ideas, because it's something in this fast-paced world we're just wondering about sometimes how to get through the day. Another question, which you probably could have seen coming, is, you know, I eat, sleep, and breathe what's happening to our planet and climate change and climate action plans and how I can be a part of the shift. Where do you stand on that in terms of what you cover for Science Friday? Is the, you know, I don't want to say the alarm bell, because I don't ever want to be an alarm bell. I want to be an awareness bell. Are you leaning more towards informing people about, you know, all of the climate actions that they are participating in that might help us?
I'm on the alarm bell side of this thing, because I think, you know, and I talk to a lot of scientists about climate change. This is really
big.
The biggest challenge facing us.
It
now
really is.
It is the biggest challenge, and it gets me so upset that we are not really talking about it in the political arena really much. We have all these politics going on. People are not talking about climate change or global warming. And I was just reading this week, and we're setting up a show we're going to do on Science Friday, where the congressional committee that, you know, in the House is thinking about subpoenaing all the records of the climate scientists who work for NOAA. They're going to challenge them.
No.
They want to see. Oh, this is
Ira. No,
I lost a whole night's sleep this week about this, you know, because they want to put their thumb down on this. You know, this is the great challenge as journalists and media people have to make sure that this big issue does not get swept under a rug or is not trivialized, and people have to know what their elected officials are doing.
It's the number one question we should be asking, and that makes me really, literally, physically sick to my stomach, because I did not know that, and there's just so many things that you can stay on top of, and I just say, yes, the alarm bell, and yes, let's hear it for stupidity.
It brings me back to the first thing. It's the first thing we talked about, which is that those who have the privilege to know have the duty to act. If you have the privilege to know all about these things, which I do, I have the duty to act on it and to tell other people. It's the way I act on it. You know,
it's
I can't
really, really
have
important.
Any magic wand anywhere.
No,
but we can. You know, it's just as you know, Jane Lubchenco. I asked her. She used to be the head of NOAA. I said she just left, and she's now working as an ambassador for the oceans for the White House. I had a talk with her the other day, and I said, what was it like to be in Congress? She used to testify in Congress about, you know, weather and things. She said, one day I was testifying that we needed a weather satellite because they're getting old. We need a new one. And a congressman looked at me.
What a concept.
He looked at me, and he said, why do we need a weather satellite? Why do we need that at all? Why do we have to spend money on that when I can just change the channel and get all the weather I need from the Weather Channel?
I'm sorry.
She said, you can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't. You know? And then they're going to run, some of them are probably running for president that said that. And it's like, to me, it's so basic and should be taken out of the political conversation because it's science. It's not my opinion. These scientists that you're talking about that put the creator in a very special box, they're studying the science. They're reading numbers. They're doing the research and they're reporting on it. There's not.
But you know, there's a great number of evangelicals
crazy.
Who believe that you should still be stewards of the earth
yes.
and care about
yes.
this stuff.
Yes, yes, yes. And they will tell you, I've had them on my show. It says it in the Bible. That is, it is each man's responsibility, and it probably does say man's responsibility, little pun there, about being good stewards of the earth. It's biblical. And so there's no religious beliefs that are counterintuitive to preserving Mother Earth and this great planet
no.
of ours.
So, we don't have any place to go.
No. And it's a conversation, you know, we should start it with that, every conversation. And sometimes I'm in at a conference or in meetings and they're talking about these big important issues. And I'm thinking, it really doesn't matter if we're not here because if we keep going on this trajectory headed towards the sun, this big project is really not going to be the biggest, most important idea shaping the future of our planet. So
no, you know, we can't be afraid to talk about big ideas. We have to talk about them and find a way to get them done.
Really,
you know,
do.
When you talk about the environment, the one thing, they're always talking about what's it going to cost. You know, it's going to put people out of jobs. The bigger question is, what's it cost not to do anything? No one's ever been able to come up with a number for me about what it's going to cost when the oceans rise and you have to move all these people. You have to move them off the oceans away or build the dikes and the dams and stuff like that. What's that going to cost you?
And where the people are, the highest concentration of populations on our country, it's coastal. There's the
yeah.
big abyss in the middle. And, you know, like, what is the Midwest anyway? And there's like 300 people in Wyoming. So it's like we have to look at really big, highly concentrated areas with intense populations.
Well, and then we have news, you know, I was reading this a couple of weeks ago, that all this water, this cold water that's running off of Greenland, is upsetting the warming currents that go to Europe. And it's, you know, if you look at London is on the same latitude as Alaska.
We are headed for trouble. And I have to go to a place sometimes where you be the voice of hope, possibility, and change. And that all starts with awareness. And that's what you're trying to
yes.
do, build awareness,
yes.
get people excited, and then the call to action. Because once anybody knows better, they can do better. So it's one of the basic tenets of the things you do. So it's going to be my last question, I think. Is there anything else that's like blowing your mind, dying for you to talk about? Because this has been a great interview. I've had so much fun. The time has flown. And, you know, I remember asking Jane Goodall, I said, Jane, is there anything you haven't been asked that you want to talk about? And her answer was absolutely and positively no. She said, I think everything I've ever wanted to talk about, someone asked the question.
In my career, have I ever wanted to talk about it? No, I wish there were people alive who I never got to talk to, like Steve Jobs or people like that, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, I never got to
yes.
talk to these people.
And those are my great,
you know,
I get that. I get that.
Been.
And that's the, like on my list of people I really want to interview while I'm still, you know, hot, hipping and happening as Mrs. Green's World. And then the other thing I think we should talk about is support for what you're doing. And we can give a shout out for that because it's really important. All of these things take money and there's a way to support Science Friday and they can go to the website, follow you on Facebook and it's all sci-fry, is Facebook and sciencefriday.com is the website and sci-fry is Twitter. And they are ways to support you, but donating, becoming a sustaining member is a good way to make sure that things like Science Friday not just never die, but continue to grow and expand.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you for the work that you do, too. And I'm sure you need support as much as I do.
We do. We really do. And thank you for saying that. We do that call out. And it's like, come on, guys, keep me going.
We are.
Keep Mrs. Green's World. Yes.
We are all in this together.
Together. We are all, what great words on which to end the show. And I just want to do a little promotion. Next, my Down to Earth show on Tuesday night is with Mary Lee Pangman, author of Getting Potted in the Desert. It's a great show about desert gardening. And then on November 7th, Michael Schumann. He's a great guy, an economist, attorney, author, and entrepreneur, and one of the world's leading experts on community economics. Ira Flatow, I don't know if I've ever said this on a show. I love you, man.
Hey, man. Back at you.
Thanks for being on
Thank
Mrs.
you.
Green's World.
You're very welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Make it a great green week, everybody.